to start our meeting. As soon as I get back to, I couldn't get my, for whatever reason, half of my network went down to my house, so I can't get to the printer.
Wow.
Okay.
Anyway, first up, the order is called order. Jim Patrick here. Bill Brannigan
here.
Bob Berman
here.
Jim Hasselman
here.
Gary East
here.
Braulio Escobar
here.
Ooh, it works.
Justin Capri and Greg Sutton not here. All right. First up is potential code revisions for short-term rental group work group consideration. Eric.
Sure, and I'll go ahead and put these on the screen here. At the, and Bill, you'll see this again on Thursday.
I'm sure I will.
Should everybody, hey, Braulio, can you see that okay?
I can see it just fine, thank you.
Yep. So, at its last meeting on, I think it was like April 27th, the short-term rental work group is charged with kind of, they've been observing the implementation for a while here. They need to put together a final report. And at their last meeting, they talked about some areas where they would like to see some adjustments made to the code to improve the implementation. And so coming out of that meeting, I took their feedback and worked it into a draft set of revisions, which I'm going to kind of walk through here in terms of what the nature of those revisions are. They had the benefit of prior citizen correspondence as part of that discussion. We talked about areas outside the existing overlay and, whether or not they want to make any adjustments those that are outside the overlay phasing out. And they were satisfied with the approach that's in the code right now, which is they phase out upon change of ownership. So they had the option of, say, trying to accelerate that or put a date certain to it in some capacity, 5 years, 10 years, whatever. They did not choose to go down that path. So they felt that this is adequate. We had 45 vacation rentals outside the overlay in November of 2019, we have 36 now. So, and that's basically what, about 3 years at this point. Mm-hmm. That seems to be, at least, for those that chose to share comments during that part of the discussion, that I think John Rogers made a point that he felt that that's reasonable progression at this point in time. So. But let me run through the changes.
Well, let me just ask if we had a consensus, not a consensus necessarily, but if we had a majority that wanted to pursue some language like that, when would be the appropriate time to do that?
It's interesting because, the short-term rental work group is charged with making their recommendations to council. And then they'll be wrapping up their work. They got to make a recommendation in September, wrap up by the end of the year. That's going to lead to some code changes, and there may be a few other things that they choose to share with the council. As a planning commission, you are free to initiate legislative amendments, as you know, by motion independently. As a matter of strategy, you might want to wait till they make the recommendation or just share your thoughts with them and see where their recommendation lands as opposed to trying to initiate something in parallel with where they're going. I think it would confuse things. So that's my thoughts. I mean, you guys.
Okay, I'm May 10, Thursday. No, I can't do it Thursday, but maybe I'll.
Yeah, it's Thursday at 3.
Maybe I'll write something up for the committee, and if they choose not to move, then maybe next year after they're gone, we can take another look at it.
Yeah. I did get the sense, and when we get to this code section, I'll talk about it. Well, not just the sense, I got it loud and clear from certainly the council member representatives I'm there that they're not really interested in a deep dive on STR issues that's going to be controversial right now. That came up with the, because I talked to him about that. Well, hey, look, you got this 200, you know, cap.
Right. Yeah.
But you're set at 176, and the code says that that, you know, there's a process, you know, there's, you know, if by resolution you could adjust that. You know, we have people bugging us about, you know, a wait list that's 3 to 4 years deep. What is your guidance as to, you know, how we approach this, you know? And they said, well, look, we don't want to be looking at this on any kind of regular basis. It's just too hot of an issue. And they felt, we're just going to stick 176. We want you to stick 176 in the ordinance and get rid of the resolution language. And that's what's in this draft.
I tend to agree with that.
You know,
especially given our, we've talked about population growth forecast.
Yeah.
There, you know, it's going to be, what, 1% or less. So there really isn't any need to adjust that, I don't think.
The nice thing about having a resolution option where you can do incremental adjustments is it's a way of providing a release valve short of doing a full-on ordinance change. You know, at some point, if it's 6-8 years deep and you know, we're going to be looking at short-term rental issues every 7-8 years period, probably, just because of the nature of what they are, the changing industry. That wait list gets 6 to 8 years, you know, deep. There'll probably be people demanding that there be some adjustment, and then others saying we don't want it to be a significant adjustment, and boom, you know, we have that whole discussion. Locking it in to a specific figure for a very, very long time, I think, eventually will bubble up, you know. Okay, so for 425, as you recall, with the short-term rental code, there's two pieces. There's a process piece, largely non-land use related, which is 425, and then there's land use stuff, which is 1425. Almost all the changes are in 425, except for the one I was just mentioning relative to the cap. So in 425, the first change, I think, had to do with grace period, which I just brought up here. I'll blow it up a little bit so it's easier to read. So this actually applies in the, really just to those, yeah, there. Limited circumstances where somebody can sell a vacation rental property and it's immediately eligible for vacation rental use for the buyer, which would be inside the vacation rental overlay on commercial property or immediately adjacent to commercial property. That was what that was defined as. So it's a relatively small part of the overall total number of licenses. That said, we have that, those sales have been happening, and the awkward position it puts some folks in is those tend to be fairly high demand vacation rentals. They're booked out for an extended period of time. You do a real estate transaction, you have people who have had already booked certain weekends some time ago, reserved that unit, and so the new buyer's left going, well, what do I do? Can I rent the units or not? We up to this point have been saying, well, you have to have a license. What this is it's a grace period. It makes it clear that, hey, look, for, you know, 30 days, you know, and they felt that was a reasonable time frame, you know, you got 30 days to come and get your license, and any rentals that happen in that grace period are fine. That way it provides some continuity and you're not forced to get people upset about renting in Newport, which doesn't play well for Newport either, you know, generally.
The 30 days is just a time period to apply.
Correct. And then the way this is set up is that they're still under the grace period until they've obtained the license. So once they've applied, you know, we're going to have to do the inspections and things of that nature, but they're in the process at that point, and that is more controllable.
Okay, but
Derek?
Yeah.
If a person sells the property and then there's this grace period and the new owner is then granted the license, are they in fact kind of cutting the queue of all those other folks who are waiting for a license and they're a couple years out?
They are, but that's how we set the process up. Because there was an understanding that, certain properties, particularly those in the tourist commercial areas, like what we're talking about here, were designed originally as vacation rentals. I mean, many of these condominiums were condominium motels back in the when they were originally constructed in the late 70s and 80s. And so through that code amendment, there was a desire to say, hey, look, these areas, these existing commercial areas or properties immediately adjacent to commercial, they should have a right to continue as vacation rentals. And so that was baked into the code changes in 2019.
So yeah, if you want to jump the queue, buy one of those.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're in commercial areas. And so there's an expectation that, you know, you're gonna see, you know, vacation rentals in a commercial area. Whereas those in the say the residential areas that are within the overlay, that's where, hey, you know, this doesn't apply. And if it's sold, a new buyer wants to use it for vacation rental purposes, they go on the wait list. And the accommodation there was for the residential areas within the overlay, hey, once a vacation rental, not always a vacation rental. But in the tourist commercial area, hey, it's expected to be a vacation rental. That's why it's a tourist commercial area. If you want to have
I can see. I can see.
Hmm?
Okay. Again, this is, you know, we're reviewing the work of the ad hoc committee. And it's not necessarily our committee's job to provide or to override what they're doing. We can provide comment to them, but otherwise, it's their report to the city council.
Right. Any comment you provide, I'm sure we'll pass along, and I'll have Bill's help to make sure we get it all conveyed over to the group.
Now, they're essentially by applying, being granted a temporary endorsement.
Pretty much.
And I assume that all of the conditions that were on the old endorsement are forwarded to the new one.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if they were limited by off-street parking, even though they had more bedrooms,
right,
that would still apply. That same limit would still apply.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets relooked at when you go through the inspection process.
I think the biggest advantage of on these having them back go back through the inspection process is new owners aren't familiar with what all these rules are. They buy a unit, but they may not. And so we have a chance to go through and they become familiar with the types of issues they need to stay on top of for maintenance purposes. The good neighbor agreement, something that they have to you know read through and share with folks. So it brings them up to speed with what our requirements are.
Hmm.
Derek, have you heard any rumors that perhaps residents of the city might want to put on the ballot a measure like the short-term rental rule that was enacted countywide?
Well, I haven't heard of anything that's in circulation, no.
Okay.
I'm not even sure where that is at right now. I know there was some litigation on that, and I'm not sure.
They're before Luba, aren't they?
Litigate.
It went to Luba.
Yeah, but I'm not sure what its status is offhand.
Delayed is almost inevitable.
And who's to say? I mean, you know, a ballot measure that applies to rural residential property versus one in an urban environment, they may not play the same way. There are different issues in a rural environment than you have septic, for example, that you don't have in an urban environment. You have a higher densities in an urban environment than you have in a rural. So who's to say if something does go, what would that look like and how would people feel about it? That's all speculation. Next one had to do with, I think, getting the whole waiting list stuff worked into code. Yeah. So I put a whole brand new section in here that encapsulates what the waiting list process would be. The initial work we did in 2019 just said we were to create a waitlist, and we hit the waitlist within a few months of when the ordinance was adopted, and it didn't really provide any direction for what that looks like. But we've been working with some, you know, internal administrative rules to get that all up and running, and it seems to be functioning reasonably well. And this really kind of distills that actually into code. I think the big operatives with the wait list are, one, that we only do it once a year. We don't really have the resources to be playing with this, you know, and constantly going through and reconciling numbers every time one license might become available. And it gets tricky given that, you know, you have some licenses, for example, that aren't active, but they haven't lost their rights yet because they were non-conforming. They have 12 months before their rights fully expire. And anyway, it seems to work reasonably well, you know, just after we do the annual renewal period, which is we're in right now, and we'll wrap up mid-August. That's when we reconcile, figure out how many waitlist licenses are available, and then we go through the waitlist and make those available to people. There are some circumstances where somebody's on a waitlist and they don't meet a standard, such as a spacing standard. They do have a right to submit a conditional use application to you. That was built in as kind of a safety valve. You haven't received one, I don't believe, under the new ordinance yet. I think last of them that you guys dealt with were under the old ordinance. But that's there. So you could see a conditional use application. Most folks, though, in that circumstance, up to this point, have just said, hey, look, we'd rather just stay where we're at on the wait list, skip us over, and maybe next year. That circumstance has changed, and that other vacation rental has gone away. You know, so
Do you see the goal of the ordinance of trying to transition the short-term rentals out of residential neighborhoods and towards the commercial neighborhoods?
Not so much. It has more to do with just making sure that we don't have undue concentration of vacation rental dwellings in a particular neighborhood. That's the biggie with the spacing standard. So.
And how many do you expect, slots do you expect in a month?
Well, the last couple of years we've had about, 23? I think the last 2 years in a row, I think we've had 23.
Oh, that's substantial.
So, but we have 78.
A month or a year?
Total. I mean, that'd be 23 new licenses that we can make available to people on the wait list.
Per year,
correct. So in the low 20s, you know, our current wait list is 78. So you're 3 to 4 years.
Should
is what you're
you
expecting.
Consider, I mean, if you assume there are 28, you said?
23.
Well, so at least 10 halfway through on average. Is that not worth doing a cycle
prior to the
renewal period?
You know,
twice a year instead of once a year is basically what I'm suggesting.
It's a resource issue for us, Bob. It's very labor intensive for us to go through that, work with all of those owners, get them all licensed up, and to do that twice a year, just on top of everything else we need to do, would be difficult.
Well, it's the same amount of ultimate work. You get the same number of people you have to deal with.
Well, no, not exactly, because then you go back down through the list, and it's not just, and you know, and you're working through that group, that next group, and then figuring out whether or not they want to proceed or not, helping them through. So, you know, it seems like, I mean, we can pass that along to the short-term rental work group if they feel that's necessary, but it seems to work reasonably well, because we make the license. The other thing is, when we're making these licenses available to the waitlist folks, it's in the fall, and they need to gear up for this. They're typically gearing up for the next summer season, and many of them, you know, it takes a while before they even let us know, because maybe they have existing tenants in there that they've got to work with, and then they've got maybe windows they got to deal with or other structural things. So they're all different. It's not like we know 10 right off the bat. We'll know 10 after a while. for example, or 5 or right. 7. Well,
the resource thing, I mean, is fine if that's valid. Because, but just seems like we could make more licenses available earlier rather than waiting till the annual renewal. And 10 is a substantial number. Mm-hmm. You might want to discuss it with the committee, just to see. But I realize the resources, that can be a showstopper.
Yeah, and actually, Sherry does a lot of this. And Sherry, if you want to just take a minute and kind of share with them kind of what it's like working through the wait list with folks, because it's pretty time consuming.
It is a process. So it's going through the list, confirming like that they're still owners, that we have to contact them three different ways. We call them, we mail them, we email them to offer the spaces. Then it's getting, of course, the application packets out to them, the intake for those, and the processing that goes with that. And then, just following up with that. Of course, like what Derek said, some of these can take through the rest into the next year. And it's just, keeping that going. So it's time consuming and it is a process. And So I don't know if anything else.
Well, yeah, my only point was, it's an average of X number of hours per endorsement. And it's either 20 times in the fall or 10 times that much time in the spring and again in the fall. So, but I realize that the workload varies. And you might want to just bounce it off the committee. They'll probably forget it on your recommendation, but it's worth asking the question.
Any other thoughts relative to the wait list? I think one other advantage we have about doing that annually is it's kind of lined up with the renewal process, so we're geared up and mobilizing not just for those on the wait list, but for those going through a renewal. So we're dealing with a lot of those folks too.
Which,
frankly, the biggest issue on the renewals has to do with insurance. That's one of the bigger issues, and getting them to actually provide all the required information, such as photos of the parking spaces and stuff like that. Even though we've simplified our application materials and are very explicit about what we're looking for, people are people, so we don't. You'd be surprised. It's very rare that we get all the information we're asking for at the first attempt. So it's a bit of back and forth. Let's see. Oh, I think the next one had to do with.
Oh, wait a minute. One wording thing here.
Yeah.
It says owners' properties that can satisfy approval standards. They aren't even going to know what that is initially. They have 60 days to apply. Is that reasonable? Well, I mean, it says only if they can satisfy the approval standards, they have 60 days. But they don't even know whether they can satisfy the approval standards.
Well, those that wish to seek a conditional use permit approval will be provided at least 60 days to submit their application.
Well, how are they going to know they need one?
Well, tell them. That's why it says, we what we do is we contact them chronologically as we go down through the list, and we'll let them know, hey, wait, you don't meet a spacing standard right now. Your option is to either just wait and stay where you're at on the list, or you can pursue a conditional use application.
Okay. All right. You'll tell them, and the ones that do meet the requirements then have 60 days to apply.
Correct.
You may want to say 60 days from what? But
60 days from what? I'm sorry?
From what, exactly?
That's Typically from when contacted, but yeah, we can 60 days from what, because we don't have, we need a little bit of flexibility as to when we do that outreach.
Oh, yeah.
Based on whatever, you know, other things we're working on.
Would that be just contacted by the city?
Yeah.
Is your start date?
Yeah, from when contacted.
So this point G there, point of that is they could do all their fussing around and get everything in order, but they have to do it by August 15th.
Yeah, that's...
Otherwise, they lose that spot and somebody else...
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, they basically get a year to get everything done. Conditional use approval, then their, you know, licensing, all of that. They get a year.
So how many do you have in process at one time? If they're taking, are they actually taking an entire year to do this?
Some take quite a bit of time, and I think the example on those tends to be those that maybe had a tenant and they're giving them some additional time to get out of the unit.
Oh, okay.
Before they make transition it over, and then they invariably are doing improvements to the unit once the tenant leaves, because they're making it into a, you know, adjusting it for short-term rental use. Sometimes it's a required improvement, such as, say, fire egress to a bedroom, which is one of those standards. It's one of the common ones that comes up. In fact, we've had a number of folks that have been grousing about it's taking longer than they wanted it to because of the whole, you know, issue with getting any kind of building products right now.
You order a window, it's 8 weeks.
Yeah.
It's 2 months to get a window. Okay.
And go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Are we still going? Can we go talk about violations?
Yeah, that was the next one that comes up. That's F. That's this guy right here. And what the work group wanted was they felt that it'd be reasonable to put in some language that says, "Look, if you have a civil infraction on your property, even if it's unrelated to the short-term rental, it counts as a strike against a short-term rental." The expectation being that, look, you've essentially agreed by getting a license with the city to operate a short-term rental that you'll comply with all of the city's codes. So, we have had that happen in several cases, where in one very prominent case where you know, there have been a number of infractions related to a unit that's not a licensed short-term rental, but it's on the same property as a licensed short-term rental. So
is that somebody operating illegally?
That particular one was one where unlicensed dwelling unit on the same property was being used illegally, yes.
That, all right. I think I know which one that is.
But that's not the only circumstance where it's come up, though.
Yeah, but when you say here a civil infraction, I mean, that's a pretty broad statement. In other words, if one of the cars is parked on the sidewalk,
mm-hmm.
you know, just didn't pull up enough.
Yep.
That's a civil infraction.
Yep.
And that's a strike against the property owner.
Yep. Anything that constitutes a civil infraction under any municipal code, that's what that would pick up. So it's a range of stuff.
So the renters that come on the 4th of July and set off fireworks
nuisance,
are jeopardizing,
you know,
the owner's,
you know,
license.
Yeah, a nuisance storage on the property where you've got a pile of trash in the back and it's a nuisance or something of that nature. That would trigger it. I mean, so some things may be more related to a short-term rental use of the property. Others may be less related to it, but.
All right, and in terms of these strikes, can you respond to the questions that I had? Did you get any tally on those numbers?
That's not something that'd have to come from Jim Fulmer over at the police department. We don't deal with that on our end in terms of how many strikes they've issued in total. So
have there been any revocations of
no.
short-term rental licenses?
No, no
have
short-term
there been
rental
suspensions of short-term rental licenses.
No. No, so just the only ones I'm, there have been some strikes, but they've been initial strikes. That's all I'm aware of, but I don't have a number for you, Bob. But okay. On the flip side, too, we don't have an earth-shattering number of complaints about short-term rentals either. We have a actually fairly modest number, and they do tend to be some of the same units. So,
but is it Jim that decides if I, as I periodically do, turn in a parking violation complaint? Is it him that decides whether that's a strike or not?
Yep. That's the job of the CSO.
And has he ever issued a strike on any of them? You don't know. Yeah.
There have been strikes on properties, but there's not been a suspension or revocation of any licenses. So.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it is true that there have been very few real problems, even on our guy recently. But you know, if you're going to have an ordinance that has enforcement mechanisms, it should be enforced. His lodging revs, or didn't they changed hands?
They did. They're now GovOS. That was effective January of this year. Same palette of, right. You know,
so
what's offered.
Have they done any audits for us?
No, they can't until our finance department actually gets our room tax collection into an automated format. Right now it's all paper. And finance is going to be working with, at this point, I mean, initially finance was looking to use, I think, Cell for that purpose. But now they're looking at partnering with the State Department of Revenue, which has decided it will now offer local governments the service of collecting on behalf of the local governments. But we have to do an agreement with the state to make that happen, and that hasn't happened yet.
Okay, but are they doing the audits on advertising versus endorsements?
Yes, that's the ongoing, and that's the most, you know, for enforcement purposes, the most valuable piece, which is, right. You know, they skim off a whole bunch of different online platforms, Airbnb, VRBO, Flipkey, so on and so forth, and flag any new properties, for example, that are being advertised, or even existing ones, if their advertising's changed, for example. So we had a licensed one that's now, for example, advertising in excess of its licensed occupancy would be an example of there. That's come up in the past and been addressed. The most common is somebody just starting to advertise without a license, which is a citation. You know, so anyway, that's what this language is. So this kind of expands the scope of what could constitute a strike.
Is there enforcement on the weekends? I know last time I called, which was a good long time ago, speaking with Officer Valentine is the name, and mm-hmm. She said, well, neither she or the other officer work weekends. So they were the ones that were primarily investigating calls.
Right. They.
And so has that changed?
Nope. I mean, you have police that are available on the weekends.
But it's pretty low priority for police.
Correct. But, I mean, that's the option on the weekends. We've raised this with the short-term rental work group. Part of this gets into contract negotiations, too, with the police department. But, yeah, I mean, that would need to be a choice of the council and to staff for weekends. That, you know, we've raised it. Do you want to do it? At this point, that's not something that's on the table.
Yeah.
So that's the 4.25 changes.
Well, there's one more, but it's not.
What's there?
So, yeah.
Which one was it, Bob?
I missed one. Density.
Yeah. There it is. The whole thing about the cap. Changes.
Oh, that's on 14.25. I'm bringing that one right up. It's on a different document.
Different section.
That's a different section of the code.
I'm sorry. I was just flipping down looking for highlighted. Okay.
Yeah, 14.25 is the cap piece. I'm bringing that up right now.
Okay.
This is the only one that actually has to go before you guys. It's a land use code, so it would have a planning commission recommendation before it goes to council. And let me do a shared screen on that. Don't tell me, no, I'm still here.
Pardon?
Oh, I thought I lost my connection there for a second. There we go. Popping up. There we go.
The only comment I would have on that one is refer it back to the procedure that you've established in 4.25 for handling that, you know, available on a first come, first serve, available as defined in 4.2,
whatever.
4.0, yeah, whatever.
Something or other. Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Write that down. Okay, any comments on that?
So they're suggesting that we would limit it at 176 and any talk of 200 would disappear?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Well, that means what they're basically saying is they don't want in the code a provision that allows that cap number to be adjusted from 176 up to some number above that, not exceeding 200 by resolution. By getting rid of the resolution option and just putting 176 in here, it's locked in at 176 until an ordinance is adopted that says it's something else.
Yeah. Well, I'm supportive of that because I think it's a way of protecting housing in the city. Because we have such a shortage of housing. I'd rather it not go to vacation rentals.
So that's the only change, actually, to the land use code.
And that'll come for a hearing eventually?
That would have to go to a hearing, yeah, with you guys. The other one would probably tag along with it, but it really technically only has to go to the council because it's not land use, it's just procedures.
I think I saw it in September, is that right?
We could be passing on a recommendation on that one, but this one will be passing a recommendation, our recommendation on the...
Correct. Okay. Yeah, the short-term rental work group needs to make their recommendation to the council in September. So you could expect that this would follow sometime after that. It's a public hearing. Yeah, this is one where I would expect the city council would then initiate the legislative process, and then as opposed to the planning commission, just given how the council set up the work group. All right, that's all I had on the vacation rental, short-term rental stuff for the time being.
Okay, next up, I can't see my agenda because I couldn't print it off, but next up is the camping ordinance.
Right, we have a meeting with some of the community stakeholders tomorrow. We're getting this lined up for a city council meeting on the 18th. Not for adoption, it's still a work in progress. There's actually quite a bit of work that still needs to be done on this. And Bob, I didn't write this, and I know there were a whole bunch of grammatical stuff in there that needs to be still dealt with. So
yeah, a lot of apparently missing spaces, but they aren't really missing. They just have no width to them.
Yeah.
So I didn't. That had to be just some technical thing. I gave up marking those.
I should have just said, you know, don't. You'll have another bite at the apple when it's cleaner. It's not quite there yet.
Okay. Well, do you want other comments though?
Yeah, I'm going to bring it up here real quick. Okay, so the gist of it is...
Don't move on from that yet. We're back at the very beginning.
Yeah.
It says chapter 9.50, camping prohibited in certain places. Then it says the title of this chapter shall be the Newport Camping Regulations. So that's two different titles for the same chapter.
Yep. On it.
And title and purpose, should that really be a .000 or a 005?
Typically, we do it as a 005.
That's what I thought. And on item G on the definitions, oh, okay, sorry.
No, no worries, I'm just trying to write down something here. Yeah.
The last clause, I don't think that should be in there, personally.
Under, which one?
G.
G?
G, oh. Wait a minute.
Motor vehicle.
Family?
Sorry.
Family. No, I'm looking at family.
Yeah, family's going bye-bye.
Oh, well, you changed it since you gave it to us?
I did. Oh, well, okay. Actually, we did. None of these, I didn't make any of these edits. I actually was participating in the discussion, and Jason was mocking up the document. And it's like I said, this is a work in progress.
Okay, all right.
But yeah, the family has no business. That, for the same reason we took it out of the land use code, it really has no business being here. We really shouldn't, you know, the legislature was clear. They don't want family used in the context of occupancy. And this gets at occupancy, albeit occupancy obtained by those that are houseless. Uh-huh. It's still an occupancy. Uh-huh. So probably wise to avoid it. And it's not necessary.
Huh.
And so we can adjust the code so there's no reference to family. It's really something that really doesn't need to be there.
Okay, so you've changed some other things.
Yeah, we did.
All right, well, we'll see it again. So we don't need to beat it to death at this point.
Public rights of way, there's a definition that was plugged in there. That's probably going to get reworked a little bit. I think the biggest thing I wanted to share with you is kind of the direction it's going in regards to permitted camping. And really what we're setting up is a situation where we're identifying that, yes, we're acknowledging that you can camp. And we're setting in some parameters here that say, but in certain areas, you can't do that. So basically saying where you can't as opposed to where you can. I think the initial attempt was to say, okay, we're going to map these rights of way as areas where it's permissible. I think the train of thought at this point is forget any maps, just identify areas where it's not permissible and why. And so,
Eric,
yeah,
is this kind of like whack-a-mole? We say you can't camp in this particular area, and then they're going to go somewhere else, and the folks were the campers have then relocated to, then they'll be expressing concerns.
Well, we undoubtedly will have folks expressing concerns when those that are houseless are moved from one area to the other. We have that happen now. You know, what we're setting up here, though, are where it's not permissible, we're going to be outlining, you know, here's why it's not permissible. For example, not within 50 feet of US 20 and 101. That's because that's a high traffic area where it's a safety consideration, where you increase the risk of those that are houseless being hit by vehicles because they're camping right next to a high volume highway. Or not in certain street segments that are heavily trafficked during the tourist season, such as Bay Boulevard or Coast Street. And so those would be flagged specifically. Not at libraries, the library or city hall or other city facilities that are open to the public, or active use parks. It's like Coast Park or Frank Wade. We will not, at this point, not planning to list open spaces. They're available. But we would be putting in some language that says campsites can't be within 100 feet of a trail. So, you know, that acknowledges what is just realistic at this point. We have a whole bunch of homeless that camp in open spaces that the city owns, or even Forest Park or Big Creek, But if their campsites are well removed from the trails and they're not visible, okay, that's fine.
Is 50 feet...
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with the proposed language you put out. I was just concerned with, you know, where will these unhoused people then transition to?
You know, those that are electing to camp, you know, in areas that are more visible are just going to move to locations that are permitted, which is, there'll be a lot of road rights away and public spaces that are still available. Will that generate some concern from neighbors? Quite possibly.
It's 50 feet.
Term of art.
Estimate. Yeah, I mean, is 50 feet realistic, or should it be 100 feet or 100, 200 feet? I mean, 50 feet's not very far from a highway. 101.
Well, how about that fellow? How would that affect that vehicle that's parked next to the where you have the Saturday market? That vehicle's been there what, 4 or 5 months?
Yeah, and he hasn't moved for a while. He had been moving his vehicle, you know, across the street from time to time. But
the vehicle looks like it's getting more and more elaborate.
Right, and less mobile. it's hard to say, Braulio. I mean, certainly there's area over there for him to meet it. That's a long stretch of sidewalk. You know, you could certainly be 100 feet back and still have a parking space there.
I worry about the distance, fixed distances, and then you get a church that wants to use their parking lot, and it happens to be within, one of these fixed number of feet, and so then you have to turn them down, and that's...
Yeah, but I thought that applied only to public. This is on public right-of-way and public
property. These are public spaces. Not private property.
Where are you talking about that? What section? Because I'm still on 9.50.015. That's not where we are? That's what's on the screen, or was on the screen.
Yeah, the public, when we're talking about US 20 and 101, we're only talking about public rights away. I skipped ahead, maybe I confused a little bit, but that's what we're referring to. Just like public properties like City Hall and the library, and public parks like Coast or Frankway.
Okay.
Or Wild.
I mean, this. Yeah, you're right. We're going to see this again, and
it needs
some work. I have a general question about registration, like on A1, right there. No, that's not it. I don't know why these numbers aren't matching up with what I got. You got 9.50.015, and that's what I got, but mine starts out with written authorization from the private property owner of the property. And it's got the same number.
That's because this is an updated version than what was in your packet.
Okay. Well, the point is that this had three written authorization things from the property owner, but only one of them required them to register with the city. So do all of these areas have to be registered with the city or not?
Certainly.
And who's
only if they're providing active car camping provisions? It's a good question. I'm just going to say, be clear about what needs to register. Who needs to register? It would be anybody, I think, that's providing camping on their private property as a service to the homeless.
Well, you just, the way this, what I'm looking at, and I'm sorry, I don't know, you know, we got all separated with the numbers and everything,
yeah.
But this was only talking about vacant land. You had to register the location with the city, but developed property, you didn't. And I don't know, if you're going to have a registration of where these places are, seems like it ought to be universal if possible.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And it really, the principle has to do with just registering where we're going to, where somebody is providing camping to the houseless as a service to, right, to those folks. That's who we'd want registered.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not it's car camping only, or it's car and tent camping, which now would be an option.
Yeah. And you'd want, well, community service officer to be able to drive by, but if he doesn't know they're there, he can't.
Right.
So I think they all should be registered if possible. And then it doesn't say, and you, I know you have probably haven't even figured it out, but who do you register with? Is it community development department? Is it police department? Is it administration? I don't know.
Right now, largely I would expect to be the police department, because it'd be the CSO. And but frankly, that's why Jason's taking the lead with this. A lot of this has to do with police enforcement.
Yeah.
You know, they get a complaint that somebody's, you know, setting up a tent, you know, in an inappropriate location, and they've got to deal with it. Or it's an RV that somebody's parking and living in. And, you know, I passed along the League of Oregon Cities guidance, so you can see that, you know, we court cases and, you know, really kind of make it very clear we have to accommodate people who want to rest in a public space, unless and that's their right, and we can't force them to move unless we can point them to some place that is permissible in a public space where they can rest. And so we tried to put some thought to, or well, what spaces, public spaces in the city do we think are really inappropriate? So we'll just say those are not permissible. And one area that we've added some language into too, you probably caught, is that it's not permissible to camp in a public right-of-way in front of a dwelling. Thought there is, you know, that would be in your residential areas.
That's one of the big problems they have in Portland.
Well, there's two flavors of this that you can have. You can have the language in there that says private property owners can make their property available to the houseless to tent camp in their backyard or bring their RV onto the property and connect it to the waste system. Now, we had that in an initial draft kicking around. We took it out. We took it out for the time being because, unlike Portland, you know, we're a tourist destination. And so you have the constant demand for overflow RVs and all of that, where people want to stay at somebody's house for an extended period of time in their RV and connect to their wastewater system. Our office deals with that all the time. And so you do that. You know, if you're going to stay in an RV, you got to stay at a campground or an RV park. You can't use residential neighborhoods for that purpose. So the initial draft had some language saying, well, you know, you can do it as long as you're not taking money. Well, how is that enforceable? How would we ever know if compensation happened?
We can't.
And so, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if that gets added back in at some point, in which case it's a land use, and you'd see it if the council wanted that to be considered. But I'm not sure how we'd enforce it. And I do have some concerns about the tourist aspect of this and people taking advantage of it. That it's not really the houseless that are being served, it's people pocketing money because...
Yeah, there's a regular series of people up at Ernest Block that stay there until the CSO comes around and rouse them out and somebody else moves in. I don't think those are houseless people, I think they're tourists.
Yeah.
Looking for a cheap place to park their RV.
Yeah. And CRVs would be the big issue there. But then on the other side of it is, you know, and that gets at the public space where it's not permissible, is if we don't have language in it that says you can't camp in front of a right-of-way in front of a dwelling, then you could have somebody just pull up right in front of anybody's house in a residential area and set up. As long as it's on their side of the right, on the public side of the right-of-way line, they could do it, and that's going to set up conflicts. Because people don't perceive that space between their house and the actual street, which might be undeveloped right away, as something other than their yard, you know. so, you know, I don't know.
This is tricky. This is really tricky.
It's really tricky. Right. Another piece in here that we need to spend some time on is what constitutes, and we don't have it fully fleshed out yet, established campsites versus, because that has legal meaning, if you probably captured that, if you look at that, established campsites, we have to provide 72-hour notice before we break them up. But the league guidance says, hey, look, local jurisdictions, keep in mind, you have some ability to define what an established campsite is. Our initial cut at this was basically it's when a tent's popped up. Well, maybe we don't want that. Maybe we want it if it's been there at least 48 hours. That way, if somebody puts a campsite up, a tent up in a very inappropriate location, we can immediately have them move and not have to give them some notice, you know. So those are a few things we're sorting through.
I would recommend you do 72 hours rather than 48 hours. Because you think about weekends here, we don't have, we get a three-day weekend, we don't have anybody to, we're busy taking care of tourists, we don't have time to go do the civil service stuff, so anybody picks any good weekend to set up, they can get an established campsite before you're ever going to get anybody to show up to move them.
Believe it or not, this does tend to be a higher priority. A lot of our police officers are dealing with these issues right now.
Yeah, okay.
More so than short-term rental stuff, because it's mm-hmm. a bigger issue in the community than the short-term rentals.
Sure.
So they deal with it on the weekends. Just okay. A heads up on that.
But, you know, if you give yourself a little longer time, unless there's something in the law that says you have to make it that short.
Well, I think what the league was recommending was, hey, look, whatever time frame you put in there, make sure it's enforceable. You put something in there that you can't act, and you don't enforce it.
Well, that's exactly his point. Yeah, 48 hours, you probably couldn't enforce it. There's not enough time.
I'm not sure you could get it. Yeah, I'm not sure you could get everything done in 48 hours.
Well, I think, you know, we're discussing with Jason about it, though, it was, okay, we only view that 48 as relevant to the high priority one, where somebody sets up in a very inappropriate location, we want them immediately out. If somebody sets up in a creek drainage and we don't know that they're there for a week, we're going to be doing the 72-hour notice anyway. Heck, we'd never know how long. I mean, they could have been there 12 hours and we show up and they said, you know, and they say we've been there a week and we wouldn't know the difference.
Yeah, okay. Makes sense.
Now, what about, I mean,
but if they take over the bus shelter in front of City Hall, we'll know that immediately.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the one we want.
What about, how would this impact the, that green tent behind the rec center and the bench on the roadway down to the bayfront?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know that that's going to be an issue at all. He could continue to do what he's doing in the tent there, right there at Hatfield.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's not an area that would be mapped as problematic. Because we have to allow people places to rest, and that one's not in an area where it's a high traffic street that we've flagged. So he's not blocking a sidewalk. No, that's is what it is.
I had one minor thing on the revocation. The city manager shutting things down. One of the provisions says he can revoke camping if the person, and this is the person is the property owner, has violated any applicable law, ordinance, rule, guideline, or agreement. So, in other words, if I'm letting people camp on an empty lot that I own and I get a traffic ticket, technically then Spencer could say, get those people out of there.
He could.
I know he's not going to do it.
Well, we also have to afford them an appeal process.
That isn't in here.
But we have to.
Yeah.
That was in the league's guidance as well. So we're going to have to build that in. Which typically would be like the city council or something for the city manager.
Derek?
Yeah.
When we're done with our meeting today, this revised draft that you have, could you send it out to us so that we can update our own records?
Sure. You know what? I might do that in a few days once we actually have it prepped for council. So you see what's going to the city council on the 18th. That works for you.
Yeah, because what you've got here are specific locations where the camping would be prohibited. And in the first draft that was circulated off of the city's website, it was not as refined.
Yeah.
And also, would it be possible to get a map of those locations? Or a marked up map of those locations? Because it's like...
Of these streets?
Yeah. Because it'd be easier to figure it out. I mean, I know
we're trying to avoid doing the maps, but
uh-huh. It'll be on the front page of the News Times.
Yeah.
Oh well, make my own map then. Once you get the list done.
Yeah, we're gonna end up putting that into a resolution.
Well, what we have here is so different than what you've got there that I I'd like to see another version.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I think really the purpose, and I talked to Spencer and Jason about sharing this information with you, and even though it's still a very rough, but they agreed that there's value in just kind of getting your higher level thoughts about, hey, you know, the direction this is going. Are there any major issues that you see? Not so much, the details yet. There'll be time for that.
Well, some of these seem to be written such that a law enforcement officer now has reasons to move people along versus leaving them there if he can find that they've done something that's breaking an ordinance rule or a guideline or agreement. He can ask them to move on. And that gives the police, he doesn't have to, he may just discuss that, quiet down and everything will be fine. But a lot of these just seem like it gives officers an opportunity to move people and cover law enforcement's need to have laws to support them. So D2 seems to be just like that.
I have a question.
Derek, with these...
Go ahead.
I was just questioning. It looks as though some of these suggestions at the bottom of page 4, A through H, were those recommended by Chief Malloy?
Yeah, it was largely his initial cut at it.
I don't know where we are.
What I have on the page up here.
Oh, all right.
Would any of this impact the parking lot on Hubert heading down to the Bayfront?
Well, the 9th and Herbert will continue to be authorized for that purpose. So what the city's doing is working out an agreement with Grace Haven to actively manage that site to address some of the concerns that folks have raised. But that will continue to be made available under a special event permit for a limited number of vehicles for camping there.
Not the entire lot, just a limited number of spaces?
Correct. I think right now the discussion's been about 5 spaces total.
I had a question about in here. It says something about notices shall be in English and Spanish.
Right.
Does that mean there are no trespassing signs for people off property have to be in English and Spanish too?
I'll have to talk to them and get some clarity on that.
So you know, the lot next door to me.
Yeah.
I put the signs up for the owner, but they're just strictly in English, so. After cleaning it all.
Well, out.
That's a violation, civil violation. Your rights are gone.
Her rights, not mine.
Any other thoughts on this topic before we wrap up?
Yeah, again, we'll go over it again, but just a comment that one person's junk is another's treasure. And so the whole concept of junk will be immediately discarded. I don't want Jim Fulmar to decide what's junk and what's good stuff. So I don't know how you handle that, but there has to be, you know, some ability that things that mean a lot to some people that could look like junk.
Right. 30-day storage.
I got a lot of stuff in my house that almost everybody considers junk, except for my wife. So,
yeah. No, it's a good point. Anything else, or for the good of the order?
No, this is going to go to the city council and then come back to us again? Or?
It's going to go to the council on the 18th for just a concept discussion, not for adoption.
Okay.
And then it'll get worked into a formal ordinance. I don't know that you have to provide a formal recommendation, but we'll keep you informed as we go through. Okay. It's only if this works into the land use regulations that it would necessitate this, your involvement in it.
This is a land use regulation, isn't
it? No, right now it's not.
Really?
Correct. But we'll keep you informed, so you can see how it's coming together, because it does intertwine with a number of land use discussions that you guys have been having.
Okay, and the only other thing, if we're done with that topic, the only other thing on the list was an updated work program.
Yeah, I gave you an updated work program through September, and just kind of started to populate in pieces as this moves forward. I also wanted to let you know, we have a public hearing coming up on the transportation system plan with the city council on the 18th. I just got on Friday the final version of the TSP that we'll be uploading to our website tomorrow morning. And so it includes
absolutely everything.
This is absolutely everything.
All the appendices. And all
one
the...
giant big behemoth document, Bob.
Good.
And I have a markup too. I haven't had a chance to go through to make sure they picked up all of the, 20 some odd different things we had.
I'll do that.
On that. But I'll be going through it too. But one thing I need to do is pick up a few changes in the code changes to align with that. And I'll be uploading those graphics too as part of that you were kind enough to put together, Bob. I appreciate that. And so we'll get that into the draft code that goes in front of them. It's a public hearing only. It's not adoption. This is a big enough document where here's the final version of the TSP. It's an opportunity for the public to provide testimony. And then if the council is comfortable after that, they would then set it for adoption in August. And that's when we'd have the formal ordinance with it. That's where we're at.
Okay. It's on the TSP section of the website. Or it will be tomorrow?
It will be, yeah. We have to get it uploaded tomorrow. So that's on my list of things to do. And where are we at? Housing, constructability, assessments being developed. That's going to have a meeting on the 4th of August is the next time the Housing Advisory Committee meets. So the housing capacity analysis is coming together. So the constructability assessment's looking at nine sub areas within the city about, okay, if we were able to extend infrastructure to these areas, what could we expect in terms of housing and at what price points based on probably half a dozen different products. So that's what that's going to look like. And we have a kickoff meeting with the Parking Advisory Committee set for later this month. So that group's going to start to work now. Kickoff meeting is going to be really just going over the work that's been done to date. It's their first meeting. But the expectation is that we'll be able to work with that committee to get the metering program in place for the Bayfront metering permitting and some improvements lined up for next spring. That's what we're shooting for.
Next spring would be the installation?
Yeah.
Or next spring would be the RFP?
It could be either. I don't know at this point, Bob. But we just want to start to make some progress on that issue. We haven't been able to work on that for a while. So,
I also want to say the new system we're doing here, I think it's going to work a little better as far as the Zoom and the way it's tied in. Although I have a feeling it's going to go to pot if we get a bunch of people.
Yeah.
I have no idea how that's going to work, but for a small group.
For me, it's worked great.
Looking a lot better.
For me, it's worked. It's worked very well, Mr. Patrick, from this end here.
Okay. Well, it's working better on our end too, because we can see you, and well, because maybe. You can't, because I can't tell if somebody's raising their hand, because it's over there. So it's like, but. I think I can make this work. I can keep an eye on that and then run something. So. Okay, that was all I had. Anybody else? Nope. Hearing nothing, we're adjourned.
Thank you.
So, Derek, the